Hello, and welcome to a bonus episode of the Underreported Podcast. I am Melanie, your reporter, and on this podcast, I share stories of crimes committed against Black women and Black girls because they are underreported in the media. Okay, so you're probably wondering why I'm calling this a bonus episode, and the reason is because we are changing the format of the Underreported Podcast, and this episode is an example of the new format. So while this story is one you may have heard me tell before, this new format is going to give you insight into the story that you would have never gotten from me, because this time is going to be told by the victim's very best friend. And I can't stress enough how much you are going to want to stick around until the very end to not only hear what she wants you to learn from her best friend's story, but also because I need your help. At the end of this episode, I'm going to tell you exactly what you can do to help me continue sharing underreported stories. So the story being retold today is that of Lauren Charles, who was killed by her husband in 2021. Lauren was raised in New Orleans, Louisiana, and when she was in high school, she met a girl named Melissa Tyler. And Melissa eventually grew to become Lauren's very best friend. Here's Melissa to talk about the meeting in high school.
I met Lauren in ninth grade in New Orleans, mm-hmm. where we went to high school. She was popular and involved and smart, just very like a remarkable person, somebody that you would want to know. She had this cool kind of self-confidence, or so it seemed. Nobody was really that confident.
especially in high school.
You know, at first, and I say this every time, Lauren did not care for me.
Oh.
No. I had a lot of energy, and it didn't match her cool, her social savvy.
Got it.
At all. But I grew on her like a fungus. And even though we went worlds apart for school, we stayed connected, and our friendship grew, and you know.
Lauren ends up moving to Oregon to go to law school and kept her outgoing, friendly, and studious nature. She joined committees and boards and got some dating in.
Lauren dated. I mean, she was as many options as she had academically, I would say she had in dating. So she was really brave. She was into online dating. You know, I look at our lives as young women, and we went through the typical sort of ups and downs of figuring out relationships, what we really wanted, what we didn't really want, some serious heartbreaks along the way. Like everything else, she embraced it. She went to law school. She did all the committees, all the groups, all the, everything she could do, she just did it. But she was the kind of person who could have done absolutely anything she wanted to. Her brain was just that wonderful.
Lauren's determination and drive to finish law school was only compounded by the fact that her mother was diagnosed with breast cancer when she started. So getting that degree was meaningful for more than one reason.
Yeah, I think it's important to note that when she began law school, her mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. She was determined to see Lauren graduate, and she passed away a week after she graduated.
Oh, wow.
She actually went up to Eugene against medical advice, had an ambulance bring her to the stadium where graduation was,
and
they had a special part of the ceremony just for them. So, you know, she went through a lot. She did some law clerking that she hated. She did some, she did a lot of things, but she, like I said, it was like, okay, I'm going to see what this is. And if I like it, I'll pursue it. If not, I'm on to the next thing. She just was never, nothing seemed to stop her.
After graduating school, Lauren bounced between the East Coast and West Coast a couple times before settling in to D.C. and eventually meeting a man named Reginald Dunlap Jr., and she met him online.
But she moved back to the East Coast. She took a job in document review. And if any of you are in the law profession, you know that that is sometimes very boring.
Mm-hmm. I'm not a lawyer, but I've heard.
Yeah, she made the most of it. Her career was on an upward trajectory. She was talking about starting her own firm with some of her colleagues.
Mm-hmm. And tell us about the introduction of Reginald.
So she met him online.
Okay.
She was very excited about their first date. Mm-hmm. She called me afterwards to tell me, oh my gosh, he dresses so preppy. And, you know, he's kind of like adventurous and a little mysterious. And she seemed very enthusiastic about him and the possibilities that he presented. Mm-hmm. You know, it was a great first date.
During the dating and courting phase, Lauren and her family started to have questions about Reggie, but he seemed to have an answer for everything, including why Lauren couldn't come to his home.
The part about her not being able to go to his home, mm-hmm, raised, I'm trying to keep it cool.
Yeah.
But I was very much, I dogged him. I said all types of terrible things. And I'm like, what kind of man is going to date you and call you his girlfriend and you can't even go to his house?
Yeah.
And, you know, he had set up a backstory. The home was in disrepair. Mm-hmm. His mother lived there. He was hardly home. The nature of his work was such that he was never really just hanging out there. Oh, I enjoy spending time with you so much. Like, he played it just so, mm-hmm, that it was just plausible enough. He just really knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Now, there's a specific incident that many people, including me, have told when discussing Lauren's story. It's a story about Lauren driving to an address that she had gotten from Reggie. And when she got there, it ended up being an empty lot. Melissa was able to provide some context about what exactly happened that day.
So keep in mind, I'm that friend.
Uh-huh.
When I'd asked her for the address on his license, but I was like, what you mean he can't go home? I'm going to go Google Earth's address to see what the house looks like and see if this, because I don't believe. And I tried. Right.
Mm-hmm.
The addresses that I was looking up, Google Maps kept taking me in like a circle.
Oh,
I couldn't quite pinpoint an address.
OK,
it was so bizarre because I kind of do this for a living, okay, like researching people.
Uh-huh. You're my kind of girl.
And for me, it was a problem.
Okay.
He had a child who he was in a custody battle with the mom about.
And you guys knew that?
Yes.
OK,
we didn't know that.
Okay.
We didn't know that.
During the dating phase.
Yes. He went to court for a matter related to custody of his child. Did not go in his favor. He said he was extremely upset. And Lauren, out of the kindness of her heart, went and bought a bunch of stuff that he liked, ice cream and et cetera, and went to surprise him.
Oh, okay.
At the address.
Got it.
At which point she discovered there was nothing there.
Right.
She was furious. She was also still concerned about what had happened with his child. She was extremely loving.
Mm-hmm.
And so there was a lot of confusion.
Yeah.
There was a lot of hurt. You know, he found a way to make it make sense. So I didn't tell you the real address because I'm so ashamed. Mm-hmm. I've shared this with you. He ended up losing the house because it was really his mother's house, and so there was a legal, and I'm saying all of this is public record. She knew about that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it was just enough for
just
it to
enough
be plausible, right?
Right,
he
right
played the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And he created these foils, these enemies in his life. His sister who sued him over the mother's parent taking in the house and financials, and the mother of his child who was this awful woman who hated him, and he had this cast of characters.
Got it.
And I've heard a lot of people or read a lot of people say she was desperate to have a family. What they don't understand is that she had been mothering his daughter for years when this happened. His daughter and my daughter were supposed to be like play cousins, mm-hmm, growing up. This was not somebody who was, you know, desperate in that way.
Right. She had developed a relationship with his child.
She was combing her hair, taking her to school. Like, she was doing all the things. This was not a relationship where she was void of the opportunity to mother. So I just want to make that very clear.
Yes. In 2019, despite some of Lauren's friends and families not being a fan of Reggie's, Lauren and Reggie got married.
No need to wait. Lauren was an ordained minister.
Oh.
He was a professing Catholic. You know, it was like, why wait?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not younger.
Yeah. Was her father happy about her getting married? I read he was not, but I don't know.
He was not impressed.
Okay.
keeping in mind that he is a hard man to impress.
Okay.
Lauren's dad is a gentleman. He's very dapper. He's a straight shooter. So when he said, you know, I need another first impression, that was his way of saying, this ain't it.
Right.
You know, they were in the relationship. They had been through the things with the mom. They had been through the things with the daughter. They had been through the things with the house. They, you know, there had been some emotional labor put into this relationship, invested in making it grow to this point. You know, she was like, I'm an adult and this is my partner. Right. He helped her with some of the things around her mother's estate. You know, he was there.
So then they have the wedding, and I read that he had no family members attend the wedding, and his groomsmen were actually like friends, the partners of friends of Lauren's.
So they, there were no attendants for the wedding. He had painted himself as a lone wolf. You know, he was estranged from his father, and the daddy issues and abandonment issues had cost him not to trust people. Mm-hmm. I mean, he sold it.
Yeah.
I mean, he sold it. Also fueled this idea that, Lauren, you're the center of my world.
Absolutely.
I don't have anyone else. You're my everything.
Absolutely.
She'd asked my boyfriend if he would plan the activities, and we gave them each other's phone numbers, and my boyfriend was like, he's weird. And I called him, and he didn't answer my call, and I'm not doing it. Mm. So then her other friend, her husband, I believe, planned the festivities for him, but they did not have attendance.
According to reports and research, I read that COVID changed things, and Reggie started being more controlling after the COVID lockdown. But Melissa's firsthand knowledge provided some correction to that.
She had a condo in D.C. proper, and because he had a child and his custody things were moving along, they bought a home in Silver Spring together.
Okay.
After they got married, it was okay for the first few months. And then he started to be emotionally abusive. Mm-hmm. One day he would tell her, you know, she's great. You're my everything. You're my person. Mm-hmm. That was the language he would use.
Okay.
The next day he was making her feel like she wasn't a good wife. He tried to take credit for her career success and tell her things like, you wouldn't be here without me. She didn't believe it. She was like, I call bullshit. And it made her, I'm sorry.
You're okay.
It made her angry, but it didn't raise red flags. Mm. And that's the other thing. Like, okay, everyone's like, red flag, right?
Yeah.
Anger is an emotion that has a way of blinding you from everything else, including danger.
Yeah.
And what he was doing was making her angry, because he would goad her into arguments, take the bait. They would get into an argument, and she was just angry all the time. She was like, I don't know what's going on. I feel like I'm not a good wife. He didn't hit her. That's the other thing I want to make very clear for people. That was not a thing. You know, she was working remotely from home, but she was supervising a team of people. Mm-hmm. She was in meetings. She was, you know, the isolation you think was happening was not happening. She was gathering in people's backyards. We talked all the time. Mm-hmm. The stories of her not being able to talk in the house towards the end of their relationship were not like, oh, I'm afraid to talk. It's, I can't stand him. I don't want him in my business. So I'm going to go outside where I can talk freely about this so-and-so.
Right.
Because he let her know, I can hear your conversations.
One of the turning points for Lauren was finding out that Reggie had two additional kids, and her best friend Melissa is the one that helped her discover that. That information ultimately led to Lauren wanting Reggie out of her house.
Once she found out that he had two other children.
Okay, yes. That was going to be the next question.
Once she found out about the woman he had been seeing the entirety of their relationship, and these things happened within weeks.
Okay.
So the woman reached out to her on Facebook. She sent all these screenshots of their interactions and plans that they had to meet in the middle. And so I got on Google Maps again and found the halfway point between where she said she lived and where I knew they lived.
Okay.
And that's where they met.
Oh, wow.
She wasn't lying. Okay. Like, it was verifiable. She was like, this is his phone number. Like, all of the things. I got a chance to meet and chat with her a few times. Mm-hmm. She attempted to befriend me. And if she's watching this, I'm sorry. I just was not emotionally able, and I'm still not. I just couldn't do it. So we found out about the other woman, verified that everything she was saying was true. She said, I found you, Lauren, through the Solo website. And so then I went to your LinkedIn, and that's how I found you.
Got it.
So I said, well, let me pay for a background check.
Oh.
At this point.
Okay.
So I hopped on the web and did a background check. And one of his addresses popped up with the name of a woman that I remembered Lauren saying had been his fiance. Mm. She's deceased.
Oh.
I'm going to leave that right there. We did contact the authorities and suggest they reopen her case. But I looked up her obituary because obituaries are public and free, and you can find out all kinds of things about people. There were two children listed in the obituary who shared his last name. So I called Lauren and I said, I need you to have a seat. Because this woman, who you know to be his deceased fiance,
yes,
her obituary says they got two kids. She was not okay. She came home to New Orleans for 3 weeks. She was like, I'm working remotely. I'm just going to come home. I need my space. Mm-hmm. I asked him to be gone when I get back. He was supposed to leave by December. It got pushed to February. It got pushed to March.
Okay.
She couldn't evict him. There was a COVID moratorium on evictions.
Okay.
She was an attorney. She could not illegally evict him. She would lose her bar license. She had a friend who had grown up in an abusive household who convinced her to keep a knife under her pillow.
Oh, yes.
And it was I'm going to do this to appease my friend, who is you have to know this friend. She's got a lot of energy.
Okay.
And she's an advocate, and she makes herself be heard.
Okay.
She's Lauren's kind of people. Okay. But she got a knife because of that friend. And I had her get mace because I was like, the knife is under the pillow in the room. What if he, snaps?
Yeah.
And we would joke about this. I was like, when the divorce is the last day that he's supposed to be in the house, I'm gonna come down there because, he might snap, girl, and we need to be there so we can whip his ass. she did not feel like she was in danger.
Right, right.
She was deeply annoyed. Our very last conversation included doing things when she got that MF out of the house, because mm-hmm. that's what we started calling him, that MF. Mm-hmm. We were counting down the days. We were ready for him to go. Now, I will say this, that last month, I was concerned because she contacted a divorce attorney.
Okay.
She took away his access to credit cards. She sent him an email outlining that he could use the car she bought him for the next number of months. He could stay on her insurance until year end when benefits enrollment came. So it was becoming clear to him he couldn't control this situation anymore.
Got it.
He was losing control.
Okay. According to police and the medical examiner, on Sunday, March 7th, 2021, Reggie beat Lauren Charles to death with a Buddha statue and suffocated her by forcing a pillowcase down her throat.
21 days before he was supposed to be out of that house, he killed her. Mm. March 28th was when he was supposed to finally leave. It was supposed to be the month that his daughter was not there, because at that point, she was a month on, a month off.
Got it.
She was so close to being rid of his ass. And I just, every time I think about it, I just get angry because she was so close.
So close.
That weekend that he killed her, a friend had gotten her a hotel room. But she didn't go. She didn't feel like she was in danger. And I wish she had gone. I wish she had gone to the hotel room. I think she just, if a person is just an annoyance to you, I think it's very easy to lull yourself into a sense of safety. Mm-hmm. I know there are a lot now who they fight with their abuser, so it's not abuse, they're fighting, mm-hmm. and they don't realize they're still in danger. I wish that I had done background checks when we found out that the house was a lot. and not a house. Those last few months were contentious. She was uncomfortable in her own house. He did all the things that he could to make her know he didn't want it to be over.
Yeah.
He didn't want to leave quietly. She took their wedding picture down. He put it back up. He put all of the pictures of the children up. Even the two that she didn't know about.
Wow.
She was just taking all of this in, and it was happening so quickly.
Mm-hmm.
She was like, I just want it to be over. I just want him to be gone.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I just want him to be gone. And the COVID moratorium on evictions mm-hmm. only extended to, like, you could only get an emergency eviction if there was physical violence.
Got it.
I mean, I feel like we tried everything once it was past the point of him being an annoyance and to the point of him being a manipulator yeah. and a liar of the highest order, mm-hmm. by then it was too late.
The one-week trial for Reggie began in March of 2023, and friends and family from all over showed up for what would turn out to be one of the worst experiences of their life.
The pictures were awful. You never want to see someone you love like that. Attack was so brutal.
Yeah.
It was overkill. The murder weapon was an object he had brought into the house that she hated. It was a Buddha statue. And she was so confused because she was like, he's a professing Catholic. I don't understand why he's bringing this Buddha statue into our house.
Yeah.
And it made her angry mm-hmm. and confused. I had a picture of it. That's how much she hated. She was like, let me show you this ugly thing. And then, you know, she was like, look at all these Father's Day cards he put up next to it to try to manipulate me. I don't want him anymore. Like, it was hard to see all of that put together
yeah.
and tell the story mm-hmm. of what he had done to her. You know, I saw those pictures and I was nauseous and I started to sob. Mm-hmm. And her dad told me I couldn't do that because I was going to influence the jury. Mm-hmm. He just squeezed my hand real tight. He was like, mm-mm. Because he could feel me. I was shaking. And then for him to have to see his child that way. The trial was hard. The attorneys for the state were brilliant. The judge was brilliant. We weren't sure how it was going to go. You just never know.
Yeah.
Especially if you've not ever been in a trial before. During my testimony, he attempted to stare me down.
Oh, wow.
Oh, he's bold. He mocked us. Green is Lauren's favorite color. It's my favorite color.
Yeah.
And on the second day of the trial, he had the attorney wore green.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I felt a way. I really wanted to, like, I was counting the pieces because of the audacity.
Mm-hmm.
He did not utter a word in his defense. I testified. The friend who told her to get the knife testified.
Okay.
The first friend who was like, he ain't it. She testified.
Okay.
A woman he had met online and used a different name with and had tried to get her financial and personal information from testified.
Oh, wow.
A woman he had attacked 20 years ago when she was a college student.
Mm-hmm. I read about that.
Testified. By the time we got to the end of that one-week trial, he had like 45 minutes of defense.
Oh, wow.
And the trial it started on March 6th of 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And she had been killed on March 7th of 2021.
Oh,
so we were also dealing with the anniversary of her death during the trial. It was just an exceedingly hard experience.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder why he didn't just let her improve his life. He could have just walked away from all his bullshit and Lauren would have made his life wonderful.
Yeah. Reggie was ultimately convicted of the brutal murder of Lauren Charles and sentenced to life in prison with all but 55 years suspended. Before signing off, Melissa shared a few things about Lauren and what she hopes people can learn from her story.
Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, now that I know what I do know about domestic violence situations, one, they don't start physical. They start emotional. They start psychological, right?
Mm-hmm.
The abuse starts in a way that does not involve touching a person. Anybody out there is really listening to this part. If you're in this situation, never announce your departure. The last 90 days of a relationship are the most dangerous. If you look at the power and control dynamic, once a person, once an abuser understands that they no longer have control, it becomes very dangerous for you. No matter what they've done before, they've never put their hands on you before, like all of that, you just gotta cut ties. Well, I do want to share that he did file for an appeal the week after he was sentenced.
Okay.
I hope it fails miserably. Mm-hmm. And I look forward to him spending the rest of his life behind bars.
Yeah.
I feel bad for his children because they have to know that their father did this. Lauren was an amazing person. I think that her story deserves to be told. Domestic violence affects women across every socioeconomic strata. And we are working to keep her memory alive. There's a scholarship fund at Oregon Law. We started a donor advised fund in her memory. I am sort of grooming myself, learning the ropes to become an advocate for how we talk about domestic violence. There are statistics out there, like every 5 hours, a Black woman is killed by a partner or former partner. I want to change the way we frame it to say that every 5 hours, Black man kills his partner or former partner. Mm-hmm. No shame should lie with these women. It rests solely with the people who took their lives.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, I have so many stories about Lauren. We just, we celebrated everything. She was always willing to hit the dance floor with me. She was such a person of faith and spirituality. And she had lost, to this point, all her grandparents and her mother and her aunt. She approached life like, any day could be your last. Mm-hmm. And so I'm very grateful for that because I know that she lived a full life. She left nothing on the table.
Yeah.
She did it, mm-hmm. As short as it was, she lived a full life. And the note you're referring to, mm-hmm. She really liked stationery. She was kind of old school. She was like, give me a pen and some fine paper, and I'm going to write you a note. And so instead of a Christmas card, 1 year, and I think it was actually the same year that she met Reggie, she wrote a note, a portion of which reads, I have a tattoo, and says, you know all the feelings in my heart and most of the thoughts in my head. And it's the sweetest, kindest, most genuine thing a person has ever written to me. So her loss is immeasurable, mm-hmm. in my life, in my daughter's life, in her dad's life, and 30 plus friends who showed up to trial from all over the country. And just all the people's lives she touched with her life. Y'all out there and y'all have a friend, they're wonderful. Just love on them. Because you never know.
Thank you again to Melissa Tyler for joining me to share Lauren Charles's story. I truly hope that you, the audience, can take something from what Melissa has said and use it or share it with someone you love. And as promised, here is how you can be a part of helping me to shed light on underreported stories. If you are a friend or family member that wants to share the story of your loved one, I am inviting you to do so on this podcast. We are looking for stories of Black women or Black girls who have cases that are solved or unsolved, cold cases or new cases, victims that have gone missing, victims that have been found. We would love to help you tell your loved one's stories on this podcast. So if that is you, you can email us at info@theunderreportedpodcast.com. That is info@theunderreportedpodcast.com. please include a brief summary of the story and any news articles or links to aid us in researching the case. And we hope to hear from you and would love to help share your loved one's story. Thank you for listening, and rest in love and peace to Lauren Charles. Until next time. To watch the full unedited version of this interview with Melissa, join my Patreon. I have behind-the-scenes footage, live recordings of my podcast, and way more. Go to patreon.com/I'm not a lawyer, but hope to see you there.